Today is a day of beginnings. We're beginning the winter term of our programming here at TSP, Children's Church, Youth on Bloor, Study and Advocacy Groups. We're also starting the fiscal and administrative year of 2012, an exciting year in which we'll undergo transition and explore new ways to live out our mission. And then today marks the beginning of a new stage in the life journeys of three people in our church family, Karina, Pasha, and Natasha. They have each been marked with the waters of baptism, symbolizing the beginning of a life in which space is made for the accompaniment of the Spirit of Christ. So it's interesting and it's fitting that we should read scriptures that speak of beginnings. From the Hebrew Bible, the story of the beginning of creation. From the Gospel, the beginning of the story of Jesus. I should explain quickly that what we read from Mark's Gospel is, in a real sense, the beginning of the story of Jesus. Mark is the earliest of the Gospels, most likely containing the earliest records of the story of Jesus. And although Matthew and Luke have stories about the birth and childhood of Jesus, these were most likely added later on. And so we read Mark's beginning of the story of Jesus. And it's well worth noticing how many characteristics those few verses from Mark have in common with the first few verses of the book of Genesis. And we'll look in particular at three common elements. First, water. It's a prominent feature in each of the stories. Second, the voice of God plays an important role. And third, the Spirit of God is also there. Now, this is no accident or mere coincidence. After all, we're dealing with the Bible. The Bible, which is essentially a collection of stories and poems that are variations on a few fundamental themes. These themes have arisen from the most profound of human experiences, leading to the articulation of basic wisdom about the meaning of human existence, about our connection with the rest of creation, and about the mystery of that which lies beyond our immediate perception. Now, there are patterns within this wisdom, because there are patterns within the created order. And we are onto one of those patterns today. A pattern containing water, word, and spirit. We see this pattern in the story of creation. We see the same pattern in the story of the baptism of Jesus. And ultimately, we will all live out that pattern in our own lives. And by the way, when we have a baptism, what we're doing is rehearsing the pattern. Baptism is a ritual which mimics the creation story and affirms that which we believe to be true in the story. At the same time, this ritual then sets the stage for further affirmations and reenactments of the pattern in the ongoing story of our lives. So what is it about creation that is so essentially true and important for us? Well, of one thing we can be certain, this truth has nothing to do whatsoever with the creationist ballyhoo championed by Christian fundamentalists. Instead, it has everything to do with the establishment of a natural and a moral equilibrium. Before the creative presence of God kicks in, everything is just chaos. tohu wavohu, says the Hebrew text, desolation and waste. Our New Revised Standard Translation says a formless void. The water, of course, is already there as part of the chaos. And every human being knows that water is a two-edged sword. It can be profoundly life-giving, but untamed, it is a lethal force. When a tsunami sweeps away everything in its path, or a storm at sea swallows up a helpless ship. In the creation story, it is the taming of the waters of chaos that defines the central activity of the Creator. When creation takes place, order is brought into the chaos. A balance is struck between the water and the dry land, between night and day, between seed time and harvest, as our choir was singing in the introit, and so on. A moment ago, I called this a natural equilibrium. Everything is just right. Not too hot, not too cold. Not too dark, not too light. Not too wet, not too dry. A natural equilibrium. And also a moral equilibrium, because everything about this created order is good. After each act of creation, in Genesis chapter 1, we read, "And God saw it was good." At the end of it all, God saw everything that had been made, and indeed, it was very good. In the creation story, water is a central element used by God in the shaping of creation. And water comes into play time and time again in the stories of the Bible. Stories that tell about God's activity. In the story of Noah and the flood, in the stories of the Exodus, when the people escape through the sea and cross over the Jordan River, in the stories of Elijah and Jonah, and several times in the stories about Jesus. Even Paul the Apostle gets a miraculous rescue at sea. If there is water in the story, God can't be very far away. In keeping with the pattern I mentioned earlier, the best water stories have lots of wind in them. Powerful winds when things need to be shaken up or reformed. Gentle winds when people need to be still and listen carefully. In the Bible, of course, wind and spirit are closely linked. There's even a word in Hebrew, ruach, which can mean both wind and spirit. God's wind, God's spirit, is at work in creation and in all those other stories, clearing a path through the sea, sending Jonah towards Nineveh after all, giving the disciples a dramatic taste of God's presence in Jesus when Jesus speaks to the wind and says, "Peace, be still." Which brings us to that third element often found in these stories, the voice that says something. In the original creation story, God speaks the whole shebang into being. Language, of course, is one of humanity's greatest assets and defining characteristics. In a sense, we make things real by naming and describing them. We have names and descriptions for everything that has come into our awareness or even sprouted up in our imagination. But we also understand that all of those things have an existence apart from us. Things existed before any one of us was born, and they will exist after we are all gone. Never mind the philosopher's tree in the forest here, for those of you who are philosophers. One way of acknowledging such existence outside of our human experience is to say that God already named it all before any human being thought of it. The Creator's understanding of all that exists is greater than ours. It is more comprehensive. It is more balanced. And as I suggested earlier, it is profoundly moral. God knows what is right and good. In the story of the baptism of Jesus, God's voice says, "This is my beloved child with whom I am pleased." Bringing God's voice into this story makes the identity of Jesus real and good. God's beloved child. Placing the story in a setting defined by water puts Jesus in touch with the creative force which brings order out of chaos and goodness from the desolate void. Having the Spirit there as well brings the assurance that God is still at work and will stay at work to maintain the equilibrium of the created order. And all of that happens in every baptism, in our baptisms today. Karina, Pasha, Natasha have heard the voice of God say to them, "You are my beloved child. With you, I am well pleased." They can be assured that the Spirit of God offers them the resources needed to provide a moral compass and equilibrium, and they can know that they have an integral connection with the one who tamed the waters of chaos, turning that water into a source of life in which we all live and move and have our being. This little font that we have used in our baptisms today is the symbol of that source of life. There's nothing extraordinary about this font itself, nor in the water that is in the font today. Nevertheless, in our rehearsal of the sacred stories of our faith tradition, this font becomes for us, in the words of Miriam Therese Winter, a fountain of life. And for all the world, a river of hope. That river of hope, of course, consists of the lives that we live. As beloved children of God, in the strength of the Spirit, cooperating with the moral force which brings order out of chaos and goodness from the desolate void, our lives, the lives that we live, become a river of hope. And we desperately need to restore and to maintain a natural and moral equilibrium in the created order. Threats of destruction posed by climate change, nuclear proliferation, economic disparity, religious fundamentalism, and many other instruments of chaos are very real in our world today. And what is our response? Well, our response is to keep on telling the stories of our faith, rehearsing those stories in our communal gatherings, and living them out in our everyday lives. We will draw inspiration and strength from our fountain of life, and we will be, for all the world, a river of hope. As children of the one who first loved us, the one in whom we live and move and have our being. Amen.